I just stumbled on it, and I got to tell you, the first couple of minutes, I wasn't really interested in it, but I was between doing a little homework on different shows, and I'd say with it for it was a video. I'm seeing young people, and I'm sure of the millennial age, and they were building something called tiny homes. And when the documentary I was watching started, it was nothing more than a couple of kids, this one young man and his girlfriend, talking about building and talking about getting some blueprint from someplace and trying it. And I got curious. My wife and I watched them all the way through it, the construction, the building of it, and finally the finished product. And then they went on to other tiny houses. And almost all the young people that were involved, I didn't see any older people that were buying or building, all of them said that they either were priced out of the market because of student loans, or in most cases, were sick of the McMansions. We know the older generation liked the gigantic houses and where you needed intercoms to find the rest of your family. But they're looking for simplicity, affordability, and the ability to put more of your efforts in life into other things other than walls around you. And as I watched, I was studying to do a show on homeless here in New Orleans. And I thought to myself, you know, I wonder if these could be used for the homeless population, because they didn't seem that expensive. So I Google it, and first thing I hit is Austin, Texas. And they've got 27 acres of a tiny home development for homeless people. We'll get into that a little bit later. But in the meantime, I was lucky to find and convince him to come to the show, Greg Johnson, co-founder and president of Small House Society. Greg, welcome to the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Garland. It's very nice to be on the show.
I was so surprised to see this, and I got to tell you, I'm a gigantic fan of the younger generation. I think I truly think they're the next great generation. I think they understand that the society we're leaving them is not as good as the one we inherited, and I think they're ready for it. I see innovators. I see creative people, and in particular, here in New Orleans after Katrina. Tell me, how did you get involved with Small House Tiny Home Society? And give me some details on this.
Sure. So I read an article in the local paper. This was back in...
Where are you?
I'm in Iowa City. I should state that. I'm in Iowa City. And I read an article in the Des Moines Register on, as I recall, it was the front cover. And there was a professor at the University of Iowa, an art professor, living in a tiny house on wheels. I'd never seen anything like that. So I did a little bit of research, and I couldn't find out any other information. It was like this guy was the only guy I'd ever heard of doing that. So I took the article, put it on my website, and I started getting people wanting to contact this guy who was Jay Schaefer, and I didn't know how to reach him. I just had this article on my site that I got permission to republish from the Des Moines Register. So I tracked him down. And by 2002, we had been discussing tiny houses and sort of, I mean, there's sort of an absurdity to it, you know, at least back then it seemed like it, that aside from him doing this as kind of an artistic expression in a way, you know, it was like an art installation, we didn't imagine that there would be droves of people interested in tiny houses. But we started with a couple of other folks, we started an organization called the Small House Society, and imagined that we'd have, you know, maybe a dozen members. And pretty soon, more and more people started expressing an interest in tiny houses, and it grew to hundreds, and now we're up to about 20,000 people that connect with us through, you know, newsletters and the website, Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, which is smallhousesociety.com, if people want to look that up.
Oh, and we'll get that again before the conversation is over. Got to take our first break. When we come back, I know I got some young people listening. Whenever I go out in public, you stop me on a regular basis and talk about different shows. What do you think? Would you ever be interested in these? I've seen them 200 square feet. I've seen them 600 square feet. I've seen them a little bit bigger than that. And I've thought of all kind of things. If you're not married, If you got a big student loan, put one of these in your parents' backyard or rural areas, or even somebody that wants a camp, put it out in the woods. Or I'm a fanatic on tree houses. These things would make beautiful tree houses lifted up. What do you think? Give us a call. Comments, questions. We've got the experts. We're talking about a new movement in this country, the building of tiny homes. 260-1870-WWL.
And I just thought that was, might be a topic you want to talk about.
We will. In the future, we will. Greg, you see anybody putting a container on wheels?
Yeah, this is happening.
Are you kidding?
In fact, those containers, they were trying to figure out what to do with them because they're basically, once they're used up, they can't really reuse them again. That's what I've been told. And so they were practically giving them away. Well, then with so many people wanting to use them for homes, the prices started going up to, you know, $2,000-$3,000. But yeah, a lot of people still want to build it themselves from the ground up. So for many people that, you know, want the simplicity of the container home, they'll do that route. But others will want to just go out and buy lumber or repurpose materials.
All right, let's talk about some of the cause, because no doubt in my mind, young people listen. I keep saying young people, but heck, if somebody wanted to have a camp or a treehouse, these things are extraordinary. Tell me about average cost, square foot, that kind of thing.
So, yeah, the cost on these sort of at the low end of what people are seeing commercially on the market might be $20,000-$30,000. People are building some of these for just, you know, $2,000-$3,000 with a lot of repurposed materials and that kind of thing. And as the caller from Mississippi just mentioned, that they go up in price to $1 million, or, you know, if it's really fancy.
You're
but
kidding.
The cost per square foot is going to be a little higher because you're talking about a lot of density in there, you know, cupboards and walls and whatever are in a small space, so you got more materials. It's not like a big empty living room.
What's the average square footage?
I'd say, you know, part of what dictates this is that people are building these on wheels. And it's not that people just woke up one day and said, boy, I'd really like to live on a trailer. You know, the problem is that the law doesn't permit you to put this on a foundation. So people might have wanted something, you know, 10 feet wide, but that doesn't fit on a standard 8-foot wide trailer. So it's like the same house. If it's on a foundation, it's illegal. If you lift it up off the foundation, you put it on wheels, and everybody's happy. It's totally legal. So that's what's driving this. So the kind of typical square footage is going to be 8 feet wide, and then by, you know, maybe 12, 14 feet. Some of them go 16, 18 feet. But roughly, say, you know, 200 to 400 square feet is what we're talking about. And then there's typically a loft where there might be sleeping area up in that roof, peak roof.
I've read that because it's on wheels, zoning-wise, it's kind of difficult to find a place to put them.
Well, yeah, with the zoning, you know, if you set it on a foundation or if you hook it up to electric, water, and sewer, the zoning doesn't allow that. Now, a lot of people will make an arrangement to set one of these tiny homes in somebody's backyard or garden or whatever, and as long as nobody's really complaining, most cities are not going to try to enforce that law. But if you hook up for more than 30 days, whether it's an RV or a tiny house, most cities are going to say, nah, that's not permitted. You know, so they want you to build on a foundation. And I think about 700, 800 square feet is like the bare minimum of what's allowed by the law.
And I was looking in Portland last night. They call it Portland's Caravan, the tiny house hotel. And it's a hotel of a whole bunch of these linked together. is Portland, is that area got different laws that allow it?
Right. So Portland and a few other areas are allowing what are called accessory dwelling units, or there are other names for them. But basically, they've written into the city code that there's a variance or there's permission for people to, you know, rent out their backyard to somebody that wants to put a house back there. So it really helps to have what's called urban infill and create a lot more kind of climate for walkable communities.
Greg, I find this absolutely fascinating. And what's really surprising, on my tech screen here, I'm getting a number of people that say they're building them here in Louisiana. They're building them in Mississippi. There's even one that says we've got a small community out here in an area called Shepman Tour, And they're telling there are about 10 tiny houses out there. So you got a big growth business here. How do people find you, and what do they find when they get hold of you?
Yeah, so we help people who are building homes. We help them find buyers, and people who are looking for homes, we've helped them find plans or build it themselves. And we work with the media and writers who are writing books about the phenomenon. People can reach out to us by going to smallhousesociety.com on the internet, and they can reach us by email or phone or Facebook, however they want to.
Very interesting. Thank you so much, Greg. Good talking to you.
And, thanks, Carl. And likewise.
I may do a follow-up on this, and if so, we'll call you again.
I'd be happy to join you. Thanks.
Good talk to you. Have
All
a
right.
good day.
You too.
All right, coming up next, we'll talk to the ones that are really no business. This gentleman is with the Center for Real Estate Urban Analysis, George Washington Business School. So we'll talk to one of the professionals, say, is this kind of a little a quickie interest for the general public? Or because of the economy that the millennials are facing, will this become a viable industry? We're talking and thinking about tiny houses. Had a friend of mine the other day said, why are you still doing the broadcasting thing? And I said, well, you know, it was supposed to be a temporary thing after Katrina, and I kind of fell in love with learning things on a regular basis. I'll give you a good example. I do a little homework for these shows, believe it or not, because it's best to try to not get too embarrassed with the questions you're asking. And in my homework one day, I stumbled on a documentary on something called Tiny Homes. And as I watched it, I said, you got to be kidding, because the young man that was doing this documentary was doing about a 250, 300-square-foot tiny home on wheels. And the reason was he had one of those $30,000 loans from a prestigious college. He had a $50,000-a-year job, couldn't afford anything, and what he could afford to rent was pretty bad. So I decided he'd get some blueprints and build his own. As it turns out, we got organizations all over the country showing people how to do it. I thought it would be kind of an isolated thing here in the South. But while I'm on the show, I get words on people in the Atchafalaya Basin. Guy even has a website, monstrosity.com, building man caves as tiny homes on wheels. Got calls from Mississippi, where they're taking containers, ship containers, putting wheels on them, renovating the inside, buying them for $2,000-$3,000, tree houses, camps, you name it. And we just had a gentleman on who runs an organization called the TinyLight.com. Now, let's talk to the professionals. We have Chris Leinberger, director of the Center for Real Estate and Urban Analysis at George Washington Business School. So are you a professor there?
Yes, I am.
Well, I'll call you a professor then.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time. Are you aware of this, and what do you make of this? This just kind of a shot in the frying pan that's going to go away soon, or is this some kind of growing development?
Well, it really is a reflection of the structural shift by which we're building the country, that rather than just constantly pushing out towards the drivable suburban fringe, we're seeing pent-up demand for walkable urban places. And so a lot of these small housing units, whether they be possibly in the backyard of somebody's house or on their lot, or whether it be what are known as micro apartment units, it's trying to get more density affordably in great walkable urban places. And by the way, you've been doing this in New Orleans, you know, 100 years ago. That's what you guys did a lot of.
That's right. The doubles.
Exactly. You've been doing it for years. We just made it illegal over the last 50, 60 years to do that. Well, it's coming back.
Wow. And that's what I wanted to ask about, because most everything I read says that zoning laws keep people from putting them on a slab or putting them on risers and making it a permanent home Plus, they don't allow them to hook up to utilities. So how is this growing, and where do you think it's going?
Well, we certainly do need reform of zoning laws. The zoning laws are put in place to keep every neighborhood homogeneous, keep them, you know, keep people moving in there that are JLUs, just like us. And when you in New Orleans were building, you know, your great walkable urban places 100 years ago, it was a mixed income, mixed race kind of place. And we're just trying to get back to that. So we have to reform zoning laws. And generally, it's to allow what are known as auxiliary units to be built and increase the density of single family and multifamily neighborhoods that could increase the density by better using their land.
If you'll stay with me just for another 10 minutes, we have to take a break. But when I come back, I've got a couple of academians coming on next week, and they're talking about their research that they call the new donut of urban life.
Yep.
Young people leaving the rural areas and the outside of the city areas, pouring back into the cities, creating a kind of a real estate problem in poorer areas outside of the city. Could these tiny homes in particular for the millennials as they struggle with this economy be an answer? Coming right back, WWL. Got to admit, this whole thing's been a little unbelievable to me. When I first saw them, tiny houses, I saw a documentary, I think it was on HBO, young people, building homes 800 square feet on wheels, really beautifully appointed, and the use of spaces is, and their innovative and creativity is spectacular. But I thought it would be very isolated, but then I began to read more, and I find these clubs of this all over the country. Then I do the show today, and we get a couple of people that run websites that respond to tens of thousands of people either interested or involved. And now I'm getting a ton of texts that it's happening here locally, which is a gigantic surprise. And the biggest surprise, I thought, after we talked to the proponents of tiny homes, I would go to the expert, the business people, and we have one, Professor Chris Lineberger, Director of Center for Real Estate and Urban Analysis at the George Washington Business School. And Professor, when I spoke to you, I thought I would get a nice commentary, but a little pat on the head and say, is this kind of little fun thing like an unusual clothes style, but it'll go away. But not really. This may be the advent of something a little bigger, right?
Well, you know, we've got probably in this country 150 million surplus bedrooms that could be converted into what in essence would be small little units. They just happen to be part of the home, and it's illegal to rent them out. If you would redesign them a little bit, have a separate entrance and exit, and they could join this inventory. In essence, keep in mind that the fastest growing household category in the country is singles. In 15, 20 years, the largest household category in this country will be people living alone. So they have to live someplace. So it's a demographic trend that's being driven by this.
Very interesting. If you don't mind, let me bring in one of our listeners. Steve, you're on with Professor Lineberger.
Hey, I've done this for the last 14 years and haven't done quite. But my idea is to do it with in containers. They're stackable.
Yeah, we got a call on that today from Mississippi. Some people are doing it.
And I actually thought they would be good, better than the FEMA trailers, because you couldn't tear them up because they're steel, and you could move them. And they have wooden floors, and you could cut a hole in them and put one on top of the other one. And it just seems like a good idea. Matter of fact, I'm going to the Superdome because I've got some at the Superdome for the home show.
Wow. I think I've read in Japan, I think some of the Scandinavian countries, That's already happening, Professor. Have you heard anything about that?
Absolutely. And by the way, anything would be better than the FEMA trailers.
yes. But we know that.
Yeah. You've experienced that. But one of the largest real estate development companies in the country, Forest City Enterprises, that is a New York Stock Exchange company, they're building a mid-rise right now as we speak, where they're fabricating these units at the Brooklyn Naval Yard and carting them to downtown Brooklyn and stacking them on top of one another. It's under construction right now.
Wow. I've got a couple of messages. We have a parish above New Orleans, St. Tammany. I'm told that you can build a guest house or put one of these in your backyard as long as you don't exceed 1,000 square feet. Another listener says they're selling their 1,650-square-foot house, building a 750-square-foot house. One of the things I wondered about, can these be built economically? One individual I watched in this documentary was building a 150-square-foot house, and it was beautifully appointed, but it was $25,000. Do you see ways to mass produce or reduce cost?
Absolutely. And I was out in Grand Rapids, which, as you probably know, Grand Rapids, Michigan, is the furniture capital of this country.
Right.
And, you know, Herman Miller and all sorts of other large furniture manufacturers are out there. And I was at a R&D facility looking at their designs for modular micro apartments that were 300 square feet in size. And they had movable walls. So you could turn your, you know, it's a bedroom at night. You move the wall over, and the bed comes down. It's a Murphy bed. Uh-huh. You put the Murphy bed up during the day. You move the wall over, and it becomes your living room, dining room. It's got inductive electrical outlets so that you don't have plug-ins, but you just get it close to the induction center and all of your electronics work. So it's been, there's a lot of high-tech work being put into this.
Professor, you've convinced me we need to do more shows than this. Love to call you back at a later date, and thank you so much for the time.
Certainly. Good to talk to somebody from New Orleans. I'd love to hear the New Orleans accent.
Well, come on down. We'll get you some crawfish and crabs.
I'm good friends with Press Kabakoff.
We've had him on the show.
Okay. Perfect.
Good talking to you, Chris.
Take care.
All right, WWL, we're coming right back. Stay with us. This is The Think Tank. All righty. Let's see. Coming up next, Scoot is sitting in for Angela again all this week. I got that trending show in the beginning of it. It's one of my favorites because you can hear the headlines here every half hour. You can get them on your screen, but seldom do you get the weather people, the news people, the sports people, the feature people talking in depth about what they're working on at that very moment. I think you'll like it. Got Dave Cohen, they got T-Bob Abar and Ian Hoke. And then Scoot is going to talk about what caused so much conversation on this show. DOJ released more information about blatant racism bias on the Ferguson Police Department. And that kind of blended into all the problems we've got here in New Orleans, Jefferson Parish. So it will be an opportunity for much discussion. Scoot is next. Don't go away, WWL, Big 870 AM, 105.3 FM.